King Solomon's Carpet, written by Barbara Vine and read by Michael Pennington.
"I tell you," went on Syme with passion, "that every time a train comes in I feel that it has broken past batteries of besiegers and that man has won a battle against chaos. You say contemptuously that when one has left Sloane Square one must come to Victoria. I say that one might do a thousand things instead, and that whenever I really come there I have the sense of hairbreadth escape. And when I hear the guard shout out the word Victoria, it is not an unmeaning word. It is to me the cry of a herald announcing conquest. It is to me, indeed, Victoria. It is the victory of Adam." G.K. Chesterton, The Man Who Was Thursday. Chapter 1. A great many things that other people did all the time, she had never done. These were the ordinary things from which she had been protected by her money and her ill health. She'd never used an iron, nor threaded a needle, been on a bus, nor cooked a meal for other people, earned money, got up early because she had to, waited to see the doctor, or stood in a queue. Her great-grandmother had never dressed herself without the help of a lady's maid, but times had changed since then. Places had not changed much, and the family still lived at Temple Stephen in Derbyshire. They still spent Christmas quietly and had a big house party for the new year. They played games, as they always had, Consequences and Kim's Game, and a game her brother had invented called Closing Pepper Gate. Sometimes they took bets on the heights or depths of things, and the location of things, and the number of things. One of the guests asked the others to bet on how many metro systems there were in the world. They asked him if he knew the answer, for if he did not, how would they ever find out? He said of course he did. He would not have suggested it otherwise. She said, "What's a metro system?" "An underground railway. A tube." "Well, how many are there?" "Well, that's what I'm asking. You name the number of your choice and put £10 in the kitty."
"In the world?" she said.
"In the world." She had no idea. She said 20, thinking that must be far too many. Someone said 60. Someone else said 12. The man who had proposed the wager was smiling, and seeing his smile, their sister said 100, her brother-in-law 90. He won and got the kitty. The answer was 89.
"One for every year of the century," someone said, as if it were appropriate.
"I've never been in the tube," she said. At first no one believed her. She was 25 and she'd never been in the tube. It was quite true. She mostly lived in the country, and she was rich. Also, she was not strong. There was little something wrong with her heart, a murmur, a valve that functioned less than perfectly. The older people called her delicate. She had been told that having children might present problems, but nothing that could not be managed. She might want children one day, but not yet. It made her lazy. It made her rather self-indulgent. For instance, she never felt guilty about lying down after lunch. She liked having people about to look after her. It had never occurred to her to get any sort of job. Since she was 17, she had had her own car, and when she came to London, a fleet of private hire cars at her disposal, not to mention the taxis that swept round the Mayfair corners. She had been married and divorced, had had 15 lovers, give or take a little, had been to the United States 17 times, to Africa twice, explored from a car or at a leisurely pace the capitals of Europe, twice circled the world, done the sophisticated things, but left undone so many ordinary things. And she had never been in the London Underground. She had no intention of going into it. You heard such stories. Rapes, assaults, gangs, fires, trains halted through suicides, the rush hour.